We are the space robots. We are here to protect you. Back, Cooey, us. Back, Cooey, us. Back, Cooey, us.
All right, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Pusher Robot.
And this is the Shover Robot.
And we're here to protect you from the terrible secret of space. Terrible secrets.
Yeah, sorry. It has been. It's been a while, hasn't it?
It has been. But it's good to be back. It's good to be talking about some space stuff.
Sure is. Yeah, it's been heating up out here in the undisclosed Southeast Asia area. But I'll tell you what, you know, it's as the temperatures rise and it gets a little bit, you know, crazy outside, I've come to realize one thing is that even though out here is pretty much a desert wasteland, almost completely devoid of water and other natural resources that are easy to get to, there's still a lot of life going on here.
Yeah, very true. In fact, a recent scientific discovery which has caught our attention being in the space field is the discovery that even in pits of oil and other dense hydrocarbons, they've still been able to find signs of microbial life in the water that exists between these puddles of oil, if you will. And that leads us into a very interesting topic on where in the solar system are we likely to find life? And there are several promising candidates. Why don't you list them off for us, Shover?
All right. So we've got Mars, our wonderful desert friend.
Our best neighbor.
Our closest neighbor. It's true. It is true. We've got Europa, which is one of the moons of Jupiter, an icy guy there. I can never say it.
Enceladus.
Enceladus.
Yeah.
Oh, Lordy. That's one of the moons of Saturn, another icy friend. And then, of course, we've got Titan, the largest moon of Saturn, and that's covered in hydrocarbons and has quite an interesting atmosphere.
Possibly the best name of any of the Saturn moons, in my opinion.
And, of course, there was that movie back in the day.
Yes, very true. So we'd like to go through them tonight, and we'll start, of course, with our closest neighbor, which is Mars. The idea of life on Mars has been popularized in many different forms, not only in popular media, but ever since in 1996 when scientists discovered a chunk of Mars that had fallen to Earth, and when they dissected it, they found what they called evidence of microbial fossils, basically the structures that microbes form as they live that had been fossilized inside of this rock, and they call that proof positive that life once existed on Mars, which is kind of the reason why we've sent so many missions there for that specific reason, to find, you know, water, which is obviously one of the building blocks of life, and also to find signs that, you know, this wasn't just like a one-off, like it wasn't some kind of random coincidence that these structures that they found inside this block looked to us like they were some kind of fossils of once living organisms. And it's definitely been a huge pushing point for our movement into space, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. It was definitely a very strong shoving point into to getting us up there.
And pushing
trying
point.
Anyway, sorry about my partner. He's malfunctioning. Being able to answer that question of are we alone in the universe has been something that's kind of dogged mankind's inner psyche for, you know, probably since the beginning of organized thought, which I don't know, forever. Lord, just thinking about it, we've done in the past 50 years what most science hasn't done in the rest of recorded history, as far as we know.
Yeah,
as far as being able to get up there.
It's been a huge leap, truly has been, in the last century alone, because, interstellar vessels weren't even conceived of. I mean, they, you know, maybe in fiction, but there wasn't any practical idea of how we would get something out of the atmosphere. Indeed, there wasn't a whole lot of idea that the atmosphere terminated at any point, you know, for all they knew, even just a couple of centuries ago, the atmosphere could be all the way up.
Right.
So,
but yes, so Mars, what an interesting place. We'd like to go there. It'd be kind of fun, you know. It's a little bit chilly, but the cool thing is it's got almost the same axial tilt as the Earth, and its day cycle is just about, it's a little bit longer than the Earth's, by just a couple of hours. So it's got a relatively, you know, if you went to Mars, you'd be like, oh, a day here on Mars is about the same as a day on Earth. It's pretty cool, and it's got seasons. Granted, its seasons go from, you know, moderately freezing cold to extremely freezing cold. You know, you can see that when Mars has its seasonal polar caps made of carbon dioxide that freeze out of the atmosphere, both at the North and South Pole. It's pretty pretty interesting. What else Mars got going for it? Well, it's got a pretty thin atmosphere. About Martian sea level, MSL there, we're looking at around, the same density as Earth's atmosphere at 100,000 feet. And it's also mostly carbon dioxide, which isn't necessarily a problem. Just most of the other gases got vented off because their escape velocities are a little bit higher than Mars's. Gravitational pull can keep them in. So it just kind of vents its elements into the atmosphere and into space. Kind of interesting. That's what we think at least happened. But it's cold and it's got a lot of radiation too because of that lesser atmosphere. But that isn't to say that something somewhere on Mars didn't once or doesn't exist currently, perhaps underground in an aquifer or maybe even in the permafrost.
Very true. Yeah, and I suppose we should clarify, when we're talking about life in the solar system, we don't exactly mean to say that we're going to go and find a different, you know, organized sentient species on one of our neighboring celestial bodies. We're, of course, talking about, you know, microbes, maybe extremely simple life forms like small fish, if we're talking about a water-filled environment. So certainly nothing of a complex, like super complex scale. I mean, heck, even finding a fungus of extraterrestrial origin would give all those astrobiologists out there something to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even just, gosh, bacteria, anything, a single cell, just something to say, hey, here's life and it's not from Earth. Of course, it's going to be kind of one of those points of contention. Oh, did we contaminate the environment with our rovers and that's where it came from? But you never know. It's definitely a possibility.
Very true. So Mars, of course, is close, so that makes it an easy target. But it's definitely not the most suitable location that we know of in the solar system for life. And next, I'd like to talk a little bit about Titan, partially because it is very Earth-like in the fact that it has a dense atmosphere, about 1.5 times the air pressure on Earth. Of course, it's mostly nitrogen and methane, which doesn't make it very easy for us to breathe, but it's an atmosphere, and it has weather, and certainly some protection from radiation, and it has lakes that you wouldn't want to swim in because they're made of methane and ethane, and it's very cold there. But I guess the point on Titan is you've got these really complex hydrocarbons that are in liquid states. I mean, the methane and ethane aren't super complex, but you have the building blocks of life, certainly. And Titan could be roughly compared to Earth before life developed, primarily sulfur and hydrocarbon kind of composition that just needs a little bit of plant life to, you know, get it onto its feet of producing oxygen and nitrogen. Obviously, Titan is much smaller and, of course, much colder than the Earth was at that time and doesn't seem to be quite as geologically active. But there's certainly the possibility of finding life on Titan.
Absolutely. But would it be life the same as we know it on Earth, though? I mean, that's kind of an interesting topic just altogether, is that the life that we look into the heavens and we see, okay, here are these factors that we've known on Earth to be able to permeate and promote life and growth. But what if life out there is completely different? Maybe it's based on a different element. Who knows? But it's kind of interesting that we look at ourselves and we're like, all right, here's what we see. We kind of try to project that onto everything else. And maybe we'll be surprised to see, I know, we've got some interesting conditions on Titan. Could have something to do with hydrocarbon-based life forms.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. Obviously, on Earth, all life is carbon-based that we know of. There are some arsenic-based bacteria that we're aware of, but for the most part, all life on Earth evolved from about the same kind of blueprint. So it could be totally different elsewhere in the solar system if the materials that were on Earth aren't as common there. It's you know, we have no idea why life started on Earth and not on any of the other planets that we are aware of at the moment. So it's kind of an open field.
Yeah, scientifically speaking, absolutely. And that's an amazing, amazing field for our wonderful astrobiologists and yep. philosophers alike. Goodness gracious.
Those troopers. They've been waiting for something definitively to study all their careers. We've got to get them something. another thing I'd like to talk about Titan, if I can do a quick aside, of life on Titan is it's entirely possible that we might be the life on Titan one of these days. Titan, as I mentioned, has a dense atmosphere, and despite the fact that it's cold and there's no oxygen, it's really fairly survivable. I mean, a thermal... You know, just those two things. I'm talking about, you know, you just need a thermal suit and an oxygen supply. So it's basically like deep sea diving, except without the crushing pressure. But you don't need some kind of extremely bulky, pressurized spacesuit to get around. And, I mean, the gravity is, I think it's 0.14 Earth's gravity. So you could pretty much, I think there's a pretty good XKCD comic where he has somebody flying with his weight on, or as if his weight were on Titan, using a pair of cardboard wings or just, you know, homemade feather wings. That's totally something you could do, and I wouldn't mind giving that a shot, personally.
That'd be pretty fun. You don't have to worry about your wings melting off, too, when you're flying too close to the sun, because it's so cold.
Yep. You get more of Saturn than you go to the sun. Saturn's like a third or a half of the sky on Titan, and that would be a freaking spectacular sight.
Wow. Hey, I love the Jovian planets, especially, you know, Jupiter and Saturn. They're basically like little mini solar systems with all their moons, and it's amazing the diversity of in each of those planetary bodies is crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
So, speaking of Jupiter, that's a good segue. Let's hop back over to Europa, which is a particularly interesting thing. Europa, of course, is an ice shell that is filled with nice, delicious water, just tons of water, salty mm-hmm. water, but tons of water. And Europa, obviously, is difficult to see from outer space because of that ice shell. And it's predicted, though, that the amount of water on Europa, despite the fact that it's, you know, small moon-sized, is about the same amount of water that we have in the oceans here on Earth, and that's just because the entire planet is covered in one gigantic frozen ocean. Mm-hmm. But frozen only really about 5 kilometers deep versus, you know, only possibly 100 kilometers of water underneath it.
You're right, and that, you know, that is relatively thin. I mean, shoot, when we had the last ice age, we had glaciers that were 20 kilometers thick plus.
Yeah.
And Europa's it's about the size of the Earth's moon, to give you kind of a reference frame too. It's not the most enormous thing, but it's still a considerable size.
Yeah, and that one definitely has the potential of possibly getting life, because you see microbes here on Earth that exist kind of frozen in glaciers, and obviously mm-hmm. if there's liquid water on Europa, then it must be at least above freezing. Not necessarily above freezing. Obviously, the salt is going to lower the freezing temperature of the water there. But it's close enough to the freezing point where it's very possible that you could have microbes that live in that ocean, and we just can't see them from orbit because we can't pierce the shell. And there are some missions scheduled. They're still in the works. We haven't launched anything yet, but the concept of a satellite that falls to Europa and generates enough heat to melt through that 5 kilometer chunk of ice and just kind of plunks into the water and kind of starts submarining itself around looking for signs of life. And that's pretty cool.
That's pretty fantastic. And, you know, you've got a good, you know, you got good chances. You know, you look at Europa's surface, it's covered with all these cracks and stuff. And that's indicative of tidal forces, between Europa and, of course, its parent body, Jupiter. As it rotates around, it's kind of much like the way the moon and the Earth have their relationship. Each of force acting on another creates the tides on the Earth, and also the moon experiences some gravitational stretching and pulling. But because it's solid rock, at least mainly, it doesn't do a whole lot. But like the Earth's oceans, Europa stretches and compresses quite a lot, and so you get these fantastic cracks. And if you look at any of the pictures that Galileo took of Europa. It's quite beautiful, and this motion, this stretching motion and squeezing motion is what's actually going to help, push the case for a liquid ocean underneath that ice, because that's going to create some heat just by the function of doing work. Thank you, thermodynamics.
Yeah,
good stuff.
And very much so. I mean, when you look at the pictures of Europa, you don't see a lot of impact craters on the surface. There's that one big one from the pictures that we have available to us that shows a recent impact. But for the most part, the moon itself is not covered in a lot of craters, which suggests that it's undergoing, you know, a lot of surface torsion to allow it to adapt and erase those craters over time, because pretty much any of the other rocky bodies are just covered in the darn things.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's always a good indicator that, you know, you've got all this change going on. You've thrown a lot of variables into the system, keeping things exciting, for lack of better terms. And that, you know, that might be more indicative to life. You know, you look at Earth and we've got a heck of a lot of life going on. And, you know, we've got an extremely dynamic ecosystem and just planetary system going on, as far as on the geologic scale and also on the, you know, for weather.
Very true. So relating to Europa is Enceladus, which is another icy body as a moon. It's, of course, much smaller. And as far as we know, it's not going to have, like, a thin icy crust with a huge ocean and a rocky core. To give you a good picture, Enceladus is a lot of ice over a small rocky sphere. And over portions of that sphere are ocean bubbles, is a good way to say it, localized oceans that are kind of trapped, like compressed up against the rocky sphere by way of the ice around it. And that is a reason why we are hopefully sending a mission to Enceladus here pretty soon, because that compression allows for water geysers that shoot up out of the planet from those compressed oceans underneath this ice. They break up through and they shoot water into space, and we've been able to observe that. And so instead of having a spacecraft like on Europa that would have to land and bore through the ice or melt through the ice or, you know, chip the ice out, whatever, we could just actually send a spacecraft through these ice or these water plumes going into space and just grab a whole bunch of that and measure the chemistry. But there's still definitely the possibility of life on a body like Enceladus.
Yeah, it's got a lot of water, and that seems to be the common factor as life as we know it. You need to have water. And for your size comparison here, Enceladus is about, you know, if the moon was a basketball, I'd say the Enceladus would be about the size of a ping pong ball or a foosball. Yeah, sounds about right. So just kind of give you a little reference there for how this is considerably smaller than Europa, but kind of a very similar composition, at least as far as we understand it to be. Although, at the same time, going to be different. Again, this is now Saturn. No longer talking about our buddy around Jupiter.
Yep. Yeah, very true. So those are the four, you know, major players that we're aware of right now, at least the four that have the biggest chance. And we'll put it on the nose. The reason that we think they have the biggest chance is because they've got water. And as far as we are concerned with terrestrial science, water is an absolute must-have for survival of living organisms that we're able to detect. And I guess that brings up kind of an interesting point that is worth mentioning here, just as my own opinion on the subject is. I don't often bring Star Trek into discussions because you don't want to get me going down that road, but the original series episode Devil in the Dark had the crew of the Enterprise dealing with what they thought was some kind of monster, but they couldn't see it or detect it with their sensors because it was a silicon-based life form, and they didn't really recognize it as alive because it was basically a giant. It was supposed to be a giant moving rock. I mean, a 1960s filmography, it looked like kind of a crappy moving rug. But, or scrambled egg rug. You get the picture. So, It's conceivable that when we're looking for life on other planets, we may totally be running over all kinds of life, but just in forms that we don't understand and have no ability to measure. It's kind of weird to think about it that way.
It is. It really is. And As a species, we do a lot of comparison between ourselves and the rest of everything else.
Yeah,
That's
very
how we
true.
learn. So how do we, how we have to, kind of advance our philosophical standpoints to be able to understand that kind of concept. I'm sorry, I'm dabbling, getting into the philosophy zone, but
2 minutes in the philosophy box.
In the box. Oh, not the box. Oh, man. Well, they got Cheetos in there, so it's not too bad. Anyway.
True.
I digress. But yeah, you're right. Absolutely. There could be who knows what kind of life out there, and I think that's exciting. Who knows what exists out in the universe? And our solar system is tiny. It's a little, it's amazing how small it is compared to everything else that's out there. Our nearest neighbors, Proxima Centauri, 4 light years away. That's incredible. And just to think that, someday we might be able to get over there and check it out. I think we're gonna have to have some sort of faster than light travel, though. 4 years is a long time in a tin can, floating away at the speed of light, mind you. Not to mention the relativistic effects, which that's a whole other topic in and of itself.
Yeah, very true. All right. Yeah, I'd say that the prospect of extraterrestrial life is definitely an exciting one, and I definitely hope that we can find some kind of evidence. I know that we have these missions going forward, and I, of course, as always, fully support the exploration of our planetary neighbors and their familiars. And I guess we'll just have to see if those astrobiologists will finally be able to do something cool here soon.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? Even if we do get out there, we get out there and we don't find anything right away for the longest time, and it's just, kind of a downer, we still learn an immense amount of research and data and just scientific technological progress. I forget who said it. Forgive me. But during the Apollo program, he's one of the astronauts. He said, we came into space to learn about the moon and our surroundings and where our place was and stuff. But what we really found out the most was about ourselves and how humanity exists and how we strive to push the boundaries of our current understanding and know-how. And I think that that is a pretty endearing concept that will always give us hope for the future.
I mean, they also found out how bad moon dust was for moving parts, but, side notes.
We need more WD-40 on the moon.
More WD-40. All right. Well, I think that about wraps it up for us tonight. So, once again, I am the Pusher Robot.
And I am the Shover Robot.
And you have gone down the stairs. About that space, about that space, space travel. I'm all about that space, space travel. I'm all about that space, space travel. I'm all about that space, space.